It's that time of year when we tend to do a bit of reflecting, and also when we look ahead to the future. I'm Emily Means, and today on In the Hive, Salt Lake City Mayor Jackie Biskupski and I chat about what's in store for the city and her administration as she heads into the last year of her first term in office. Through the course of the year, she and I have talked about housing and homelessness, the inland port, Salt Lake City streets, public transit, and air quality. The issues, I think, that define 2018 for many Salt Lake City residents. The day Biskupski and I recorded this conversation, though, she had her eyes on a more distant future, 2030, when the Utah Olympic Exploratory Committee hopes to host the Winter Olympics for the second time in Salt Lake City. We met hours before the U.S. Olympic Committee made its announcement. Biskupski arrived at the station in a jacket embroidered with the Olympic rings, ready to talk about why she thinks this city is ready to take on the challenge of hosting the Games. So we'll find out later today whether or not the U.S. Olympic Committee will pick Salt Lake City to bid for the 2030 Winter Games. Utah's Olympic officials, including yourself, you're on this team, seem pretty confident that Salt Lake will beat out Denver in this decision. So let's work on that assumption for the sake of this conversation. What does the city need to do to get ready for the Games?
You know, we have spent the last decade plus maintaining our infrastructure, but we've also invested in the infrastructure. And so much of the work has already been done. And as you know, the University of Utah is expanding their stadium. They announced that this fall.
They're adding more seats.
They're adding more seating. And so that is one of the other things that will be very helpful to us. We are building and have built some athletic training housing. So that's already in motion and underway. And we did an audit of our venues. So we know kind of what has to happen with the current venues to bring them up to the standards that will be needed. But nothing major. There's some investment that will be happening. And the state authorized a $40 million appropriation for that at following that audit. So we will be ready. You know, there will be some new games coming that we have to figure out kind of a creative way to make sure there is space for them. And one of the ideas is maybe doing outdoor hockey at the stadium in Sandy where we play soccer. So we'll see. Some of those details have to be worked out, but that's one of the ideas, is how fun would it be to have outdoor hockey, you know? So we'll see. We'll see what we end up doing.
Well, speaking to infrastructure, you said we've maintained that pretty well. City residents just approved the $87 million bond to repair Salt Lake Street. So would taxpayers be expected to give more for other improvements to support that kind of influx of visitors?
No, you know, I'm so proud and grateful to the residents of Salt Lake City because we did real-time polling on the sales tax increase. And the sales tax increase, the voters essentially said, here are our top four priorities. And road repair was one of them. And then housing, affordable housing, some additional law enforcement, and then transit. We want more opportunities for people to get around and not have to use their vehicles, help clear the air. So very grateful to the community for their support in that, because that maintaining our infrastructure and repairing it now essentially makes us a city that will be extremely ready to host the Winter Olympics. But it also gives us the opportunity to control our own destiny as a community. And while we have this window of opportunity, we took advantage of it, and the community said, yes, go do this work and get this done. We have all the plans to increase and improve our transit. In fact, the city was awarded, because of how prepared we are, the city was awarded almost $11 million out of the county increase for roads and transportation. So that is a big influx of money that we'll be able to use to really move quickly on mm-hmm. the needs of this community when it comes to transit.
And beef that up maybe in time for the Olympics.
It will be very beefed up. And in fact, we'll have electric buses. We will have transit routes that don't exist today. We will have 7-day-a-week service that we don't have today. You know, so it's just a game changer. And it's only happening, and all this influx is happening because the residents said, yes, do this and do this now and let's get this going. We want clean air, and we know that the same things causing our air pollution are the same things causing climate change. So we're addressing both by moving away from fossil fuel-driven vehicles to electric buses and transit.
I want to talk about air quality a little bit later, but let's stick with the Olympics for just a minute. I know you're really excited at the prospect of having them, and I heard Senator-elect Mitt Romney on the radio yesterday. He's excited too, as you can imagine. But I read a column in the Deseret News from Jay Evanson, and his argument is, why do we even want the Olympics here? I mean, the IOC has a reputation for being corrupt, and the cities where the games happen usually end up in debt. And additionally, bribery allegations against the Salt Lake City Olympic Committee kind of put a cloud over the 2002 Olympics. So what is being done to make sure everything's above board?
Yeah, you know, that bribery scandal was fixed before we even hosted the games. You know, we moved very quickly once we knew what was happening. And I'm very grateful to the new leaders that came in and cleaned that up for us. I think what you're seeing today is a much more transparent process. And as we have gone through this process under my leadership and that of Senator Wayne Niederhauser, we've been very transparent with our reports with the community and our budgets, and we want everyone to be clear on why we believe we can host these games, not on the backs of taxpayers, and why this community should do this. We have the infrastructure, we've maintained the infrastructure, and the reality of it is we're one of the few communities that really is truly ready to host another games, and we're probably one of the only communities that never went into debt. In fact, we had additional funding that was put into an endowment to help us maintain facilities. And the legislature, when they did their audit, they referred to that need to upgrade a little beyond what the endowment can do as anyway costs. They saw it as, you know, we're going to have some anyway costs because of the length of time between 2002 and 2030, that there's going to be some additional need. And so they funded that already, which I think is extremely exciting.
I think it's pretty well agreed upon that the games will be an economic driver for the state. But how would they affect those other issues? You know, we're still dealing with homelessness.
Right. Well, you know, we're making a lot of progress in the new model and for providing services to those who are experiencing homelessness. The city has underway a transitional housing units for individuals who will be going from a resource center to a more independent life. And then you have the network of hundreds of new treatment beds for mental illness and addiction that are either online or coming online in this year. So a great deal of collaboration and work that is enabling us to serve those who are experiencing homelessness in a much better way. And you will see all that evolve over the next year. But then also, the games themselves, the USOC, the IOC, everyone is looking for green games. They want to make sure that the games exemplify the need for communities to embrace doing their part and them as an organization doing their part to be a part of the solution around climate change. And so sustainability practices will be incorporated into the games. And I think the model that we have here about maintaining our venues in hopes of another opportunity also speaks to that sustainability piece. We just didn't build these, you know, very expensive venues and then walk away from them like many other communities do. We have been maintaining them and using them for training and events that are world-class events since 2002. So even though there is a slow uptick of really moving to a sustainable state, we have many things coming online that speak volumes about how we already are on the U.S. stage when it comes to sustainability practices. And that's one of the reasons that the United Nations NGO conference is coming to Salt Lake in August of 2019. And that is a first. You know, that conference has never been anywhere else in the United States. It's always been in New York at the UN. And they are coming here. And that is historic. And again, it goes back to all the great work that we are doing here and how it's getting recognized across the country and how we are leading on these bigger conversations around sustainability and taking care of people and leaving no one behind.
This conversation has been really looking ahead to the future and further ahead, 2030 for the Olympics. But I was thinking back to the issues that defined 2018 for Salt Lake residents, and a few different things came to mind. The inland port was a big one, affordable housing, homelessness, growth, and air quality. And some of these issues are related. You know, many people who have concerns about the inland port are worried about dirtier air.
Right.
Affordable housing and homelessness are linked. These are big topics on their own, and we've dedicated a few shows to them.
Sure.
But can you tell us one thing that Salt Lake is doing to address each of these issues in 2019?
Well, the inland port, as you know, is controlled by a board that there is one elected official from the city on that board, and then there's an appointed person from Salt Lake City on that board. Those are the only two voices the city has on the board. And they're moving very slowly, and I'm very grateful for that because we have yet to ever hear what they're really planning to do and what is such a big project that the city couldn't do it.
It's still a mystery to you.
No one knows. No one has revealed what is actually going to be the business plan out there and how this will evolve. I'm very concerned that the city will have, you know, very little ability to control decisions that get made. We did just pass a stronger zoning ordinance to try and control some of that decision making. But as you know, the legislation allows the board to have final say, so they can still override our zoning. And that is concerning to me. There are some things that could happen in the next year that might trigger a lawsuit by either a private property owner or a community group. There's already grandma records being, you know, taken or requested. It's messy, and it's unnecessarily messy. I'm not sure what will happen. And you can see that the prison development itself is a kind of a prime example of not really vetting out an idea thoroughly, and now hundreds of millions of extra dollars are going into that project because of that.
All right, well, let's move to air quality then. What's your plan
for
addressing
that? Yeah, so this is the year where we have the opportunity to expand our transit, the purchasing of some electric buses. You know, we're working very diligently as we do our roads to include bike lanes. And also increase pedestrian safety. We have to work diligently, I believe, with those who are on bikes and scooters about sidewalks and using the bike lanes when they're available, and understanding that downtown there's actual laws that prohibit you from being on sidewalks on a vehicle that has wheels, right? So unless you're in a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. But so we do an education campaign about walking your wheels in the downtown area, and then also using the bike lanes where they are accessible. So we will increase those bike lanes. We will increase transit. We will increase service. You'll have Sunday service in 2019. That's a first. You will have service that goes until from like 5 a.m. to midnight every day, which is a big deal because that wasn't existing and it was making it hard for people to get to and from work. Very exciting stuff that helps us clear our air, get people out of their cars and be able to use a transportation system that is cleaner than your vehicle. So we're excited about that. We will continue to do our renewable energy projects. There's another solar farm coming online that people will be able to subscribe to and get away from, you know, the way they heat or mm-hmm. cool their homes. So very exciting there as well. And then, of course, we always want to educate people about, you know, if you're in the market for a new vehicle, you should at least pursue a hybrid, you know, try to get yourself an electric vehicle. We continue to put in and will put in more charging stations for people and put them all around the city so they're accessible. Rocky Mount Power is building their transit or their electric charging station project all the way from Yellowstone to Disneyland, which covers most of I-80 and I-15. And then there's talk of them picking up the rest of those areas in the state anyway. But that project's underway right now. And mm-hmm. and there are charging stations all the way to Yellowstone right now. And so that's very exciting. And hopefully, you know, we'll just keep moving in this direction of much cleaner vehicle use and opportunity for people.
Maybe we'll breathe a little more easily in 2019. Who knows?
Yeah.
Well, we're here on Library Square, and as I'm sure you noticed when you walked in, we have a large homeless population here. Mm-hmm. I know that the new homeless resources are planned to come online in the mm-hmm. next year.
Yep.
So is that the one thing that you would point to?
Well, we'll be opening the resource centers in Salt Lake City this summer. And we'll be transitioning people from the shelter to those resource centers. I believe South Salt Lake will be opening this summer as well. At least that's the schedule so far. There is still a desire to close the shelter in 2019. But those three resource centers really need to be up and running right. in order to do that. And hopefully everything will run as planned. I know that right now they are working on making sure that there's no wrong door so that there's true connectivity. If I'm experiencing homelessness and I walk through the resource center in Ogden and then I end up somehow in Salt Lake City, if I walk through a resource center again in Salt Lake, that we are able to bring up your history. And I immediately identify what your needs might be and not go through this long process of intake and sure. trying to.
And the statewide audit just came out showing that the data tracking homeless services has been really shaky. So I imagine that might be a
yeah.
part of that.
So we're trying to create some changes in the system so that and a lot of that requires, you know, technology and programming and, you know, to enable us to really connect. But you also have to abide by the HIPAA rules, right?
Right.
So there's a lot that has to go into supplementing the current HMIS system in a way that is effective for, you know, anyone from St. George to Northern Utah to use it and allow for those who are experiencing homelessness to get the best possible service the first time they walk through a door.
Right. We spoke, I think, the last time specifically about affordable housing. So just looking ahead to 2019, what is the city moving on?
Yeah, it's so exciting. We have 2,000 affordable housing units coming online. And when I came into office, there were 200. So we had a goal, if you recall, of 1,000. And we actually, with community support and bringing, if you remember, we brought the Blue Ribbon Commission mm-hmm. together and bringing developers and bankers and, you know, others into the circle to dialogue around this need and meeting this need, we were able to not only achieve our goal, but double it. And that's an extraordinary accomplishment. And most of these housing units should be done by the end of 2019.
That's exciting because the last issue I could think of was growth. And, yeah. You know, a lot of people moving into the neighborhood. So,
yeah, you know, people, we have to remember, though, that we are still in Utah and growth is internal. Most of it still
babies.
Is internal. Babies, lots of babies. And we have to remember that most of our adult younger generation prefers to live here. They'd rather stay. So you see the growth, but most of it is internal. Salt Lake City is growing slower than the county or Utah County or Lehigh or anywhere else. I mean, we are growing, but much slower than all those other areas. And so we are managing that growth in the best possible way and trying to accommodate the people who want to stay here as they grow up and get jobs and, right, so.
Well, Jackie, I want to end looking ahead. It's the new year, and that means campaigning for the mayoral race is going
yes.
to ramp up soon. And outgoing in many different ways, State Senator Jim DeBacchus is the latest to announce his candidacy. He's joining David Ibarra and former city council member Stan Penfold and you.
Yeah, so I made it clear to my team that I wanted to do the state of the city before I announced re-election. I think it's important that as a mayor that we wrap up 2018 before we launch into the whole campaign and do my role as mayor. But we'll announce by the end of January my re-election campaign. I certainly would like to have four more years to make sure that these tax increases that happened are implemented the way I said they would be. And I want people to understand that even though we have a dashboard that will be tracking that, any new mayor could come in and get rid of the dashboard, right? And I don't want that. I want the community to see that government is holding itself accountable and is being true to what we said. And that was, we polled you, you said you wanted these things, and now they're on a dashboard and you can track those new tax dollars and how they're being spent. So for me, those are important things. And I want to make sure that we continue to really push affordable housing into these development projects and do it in the kind of thoughtful and aggressive way that we have been doing it, because the market was not taking care of that and the city was gentrifying, and we are now moving the city away from that, which is a huge win for our community. And the affordability of these housing units, you know, using the tools that we created is really important, because most affordable units come online for about 10 years. We have created tools that keep them affordable for 40 years, you know. So these are the types of things that matter to me as a leader, and that will serve our city much better for decades to come.
Well, Salt Lake City Mayor Jackie Biskupski, I know you have a ton of work to do, but I hope you get some rest over the holidays.
Yes, that'll be
and,
nice.
And thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you.
What's your vision for Salt Lake City in 2019? Weigh in at KCPW's Facebook page, KCPW88.3, or email us at comments@kcpw.org with your feedback. Special thanks to In the Hive intern Sarah Sadie Khan and the rest of the KCPW team for their support of this show, as well as to Andrew Shaw, who produced the show's theme music. And thank you for tuning in. You can find podcasts of In the Hive at kcpw.org. Up next is Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Emily Means. Thanks for listening.